B-Pod Studios.
Toucher and Rich.
Stuff is never what you think it is.
On Boston's Home for Sports.
Some people just love to speak in emoji there, Fred.
98.5, Sports Hub.
Yeah, I know you take a lot of pride in seeing your receivers play well. Devin Funchess has seemed to really embrace the physicality of his routes and getting those extra yards. Does that give you a little bit of an enjoyment to see him kind of truck sticking people out there?
It's funny to hear a female talk about routes, like, funny, but fun is coming along, man. We're gonna this is a big game for him.
The sports of where Toucher and Rich, Will Brinson, is being locked out of a room by his son, apparently. He is a senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com, and he also hosts the Daily Pick 6 podcast. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Is this true, Mr. Brinson? Are you being locked out of a room?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm being locked out of a room. I'm currently locked out of a room. I'm currently locked out of my office where I need to spend roughly 6 to 7 hours today. And I just cannot get in there. And before my son left, he gleefully exclaimed, "I locked your office. Bye, Dad." And I jumped in the car for something he's doing with my wife. By the way, through my podcast, that question being asked of Cam Newton about the routes, that was Jordan Rodriguez of the Athletic. She was on the she's on my podcast the other day. She just moved to she was in North Carolina. A fellow Hick down here, and she just moved to Los Angeles, where she's covering the Rams.
So what was that? Was completely unnecessary to talk about.
Well, no, I thought that thing we just played right there, I thought it was interesting because she was on the other side of Cam Newton being a complete and total dick, which he has a tendency to do sometimes.
Cam lost his Dannon sponsorship over that. That's how Dak Prescott got the Dannon Oikos sponsorship. Because I mean, it's a lucrative yogurt sponsorship. I know that sounds ridiculous to say out loud, but it's true. Yeah. And then Cam lost that because he insulted Jordan during that press conference.
Yeah, so, I remember when that happened. Wasn't that where he came back and said that he learned about Rosie the Riveter, you know, the woman that we can do it, and he had this big speech, like, presented? It was really awkward.
He learned about a fictional.
He's like, no. See, the important thing is I spent these last 2 weeks studying Dr. Stuffins, and what I realized.
his big thing was, he goes, I found this animation of a figurehead for a women's laborer, and I've been studying it. You know what I would say to that? Think of a better lie.
It's true, Fred. We gotta play that clip because I remember it being one of the more awkward. Like, what is he talking about? Like, his kind of quasi apology was like, "Hey, you know the we can do it thing? I learned all about that, so we're cool now, right?"
I'll say this about Cam Newton. Somebody asked me, "Yeah, I did. I think I did like 400 Cam Newton related radio interviews yesterday." Yeah, just from North Carolina, people want to talk to you. And somebody asked me, I can't remember who it was, they're like, "How do you think he'll handle the Boston media?" And I was like, "Well, I think it'll be fine." I will say this: Cam has some Southern colloquialisms that can sometimes result in him putting his foot in his mouth, which I guess is another Southern colloquialism. But like sometimes he'll just sort of accidentally step into it, and he doesn't mean to. And I wonder how that'll like. That's sort
Can
of
you give us an example, like of something, because that's interesting. It, something like
a phrase he uses.
Well,
I think the route is like, oh, that's funny, a girl talking about routes, like she knows what routes are. That's not a Southern colloquialism, obviously, but like Cam is very well intentioned, and he is trying to be honest with the media. And I think people like to play gotcha with Cam. And I don't know whether it's a black quarterback thing. I don't know whether it's a You know, half the world is the Alabama bandwagon fans that hates Auburn thing. I don't know exactly what it is, but for whatever reason, people like to play gotcha with Cam.
Is he dumb? And,
I don't think so. I think Cam is very smart.
Well, we interviewed him one time, and this is we know, but we were very impressed with him. But I was just wondering
I think Cam is, and you know, there's a great Greg Olson quote out there about how Cam is so much smarter on the field than people really understand. Because I think that people tend to, I assume this is a Cam related interview, by the way.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
You know, I think people tend to look at Cam or look at Cam play and think, oh, big man run ball. You know, he has terrible accuracy. And what they don't understand is that it's not Cam Newton's fault that his accuracy was awful for the first 5 or 6 years of his career. It's Mike Shula's fault because he designed a terrible offense that basically involved Cam Newton sitting in the pocket, patting the ball, waiting for Devin Funchess and Kelvin Benjamin to get separation. As it turns out, they can't. And then taking a huge shot as he wings the ball down the field towards Greg Olsen, who he hoped could reel in a one-arm catch. It was a bad offense for years. And then Cam just sort of everything came together in 2015, and they made the Super Bowl run with Ted Ginn as his number one wide receiver. I mean, Philly Brown was his number two, I think, that year. And people were like, oh, well, you know, Mike Shula is fine. No, like the second North Turner got involved, and you say whatever you want about North Turner as a head coach, but he's one of the best offensive coordinators of all time. The second he got involved, Cam's completion percentage went up to 67%. And he was playing like an MVP when they were 6-2, and then the shoulder injury happened against the Steelers on that Thursday night in 2018. So I don't know what I'm rambling about, but I think Cam is very smart and good.
Okay, so do you think that he is someone – I mean, when you see what Norv Turner did and the difference between the first system and that one, now you look at Josh McDaniels. Do you think that Josh McDaniels is capable of being able to do something completely different than what he was doing with Tom Brady and making it work with Cam?
Yeah, and I don't think it needs to be completely different. I think that, again, the Mike Shula stuff was people have this misnomer that Cam Newton suffered injuries because he runs the ball too much. Now, granted, he initiates contact. That's definitely true. But when Cam initiates contact, the people who suffer injuries are the other people, not Cam. He's the biggest fan of, like, by the time he's initiating contact, it's usually a safety or a linebacker. And that person is a lot smaller than Cam Newton, who's the size of Julius Peppers, basically.
They just showed a stat, and he's had more contact. Russell Wilson was second, and Rodgers was third, and he was ahead by a few hundred times of the contact. Yeah.
Was it yards after contact, or is it?
No, just times that there was contact.
So Russ is good about sliding and ducking out of bounds before he gets hit. He's very good at it, the best I think I've ever seen. Cam does not care because Cam, I mean, if I were Cam's size, I wouldn't avoid contact either. But I've watched his career really closely. Like, I've probably seen every game Cam Newton's played. The reason Cam Newton has gotten hurt is not because he runs the football. The reason he's gotten hurt is because he stays in the pocket and he waits and people wanted him to be a pocket passer. He can be a pocket passer. And the reason he got hurt is because he stays in there and takes too much contact. Now, as far as the question about the system, yeah, I think this is Josh McDaniels' wheelhouse, because what you're going to ask Cam Newton to do is get the ball out quickly so you don't take contact, to distribute it to your receivers. And more importantly, think back, like, Josh McDaniels drafted Tim Tebow in the first round. You know, this is a guy that wanted to, 10 years ago, fashion an offense around a mobile quarterback. And now he has the greatest mobile quarterback in NFL history. And you can debate Randall Cunningham or Michael Vick if you want. I'll take Cam and the touchdowns over the rushing yards. I think if Cam is healthy, that Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick will unleash a really lethal offense.
Okay, so we're talking to Will Brinson from CBS Sports. When you know all the people who have not watched Cam his whole career, we think of what moment when you think of Cam Newton? Do you believe that we would think of
what moment in his career?
Yeah.
Oh my God!
The Super Bowl where he where he didn't.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you cut out for a second. Yeah. I think people who did not watch every minute of Cam Newton's career would probably harken back to that that gif of Cam Newton not diving on the ball, and then Cam Newton being we're not going to sugarcoat it, being a petulant child in the press conference afterwards. Right. I was down there. It was not a good look. I've been a Panthers fan since like 90. I'm not anymore, but I was a Panthers fan when the team started, and it was a tough look to have the team in its second Super Bowl ever, and you don't finish it off, and Cam's just pouting at the press conference. It wasn't ideal. So I think that's probably what people would focus in on. That's why the fact that, again, Cam, an African American quarterback, does a what dance he was doing, a dab, or a dab. I don't remember what dance he was doing, maybe dabbing in the end zone, and like some Tennessee Karen wrote a letter to the Tennessean, like, how dare he thrust his
I remember
hip.
That. They wrote a letter, right?
Well, yeah. Well, that's like when Joe Buck freaked out because Randy Moss fake mooned the crowd, and
that's,
you're like,
a despicable act.
You're like, what? He didn't do anything. So yeah.
And like the worst part for Joe Buck, the worst part is like Joe Buck's a great announcer, and B, as it turns out, like kind of hilarious, and it just. He was on my bleep list for like 10 years because of that. It's like,
same with me. Yeah. I'm just like, what a righteous prick. I mean, it's a football game. It's not, it's a football game. I was going to say it's not a presidential debate, but then.
I just want to ask you, what kind of bad things? We keep talking about here is the caveat that if he's healthy, what kind of bad things did he do on the field that might be different than, I don't know, watching Tom Brady play for 20 years?
What's up, Joe? This is why I think the signing is perfect, because it doesn't – and look, it's easy, it's so easy. If Belichick makes a move, you're like, it's a great move. I mean, we're talking about value here. Like, it doesn't even have to be Cam Newton. It can be literally any move of the last 20 years. It's like, I mean, this is a quintessential Belichick move. It's value. It's a great player. There's tons of upside. It's a Mad Lib game. We're talking about Belichick. But as far as bad things on the field, I mean, honestly, there's nothing he does on the field that's bad unless he's injured. Like, if you go, I finished it a little bit late last night, so I'm assuming it doesn't read like I'm drunk. But I have 2,500 words that I wrote on Cam Newton and the Patriots and how the offense will look and why he ended up in New England that should be up on CBSSports.com in a few minutes. But the thing is when Cam hurt his foot and against the Patriots in the preseason last year, people were still mad. They're like, Cam's not accurate. I'm telling you, this guy just doesn't have it between the ears. He can't. It's like, listen, guy in Alabama belt at my family's Thanksgiving party. We don't know why you're here, but you're here and you're bad enough at Cam Newton. What do you mean he doesn't have it between the ears? He's an NFL football player. You have like a red koozie and like you didn't even go to Alabama, so please shut your mouth.
Walmart fan, yeah.
Right, exactly. Like, people use that phrase all the time. Like, Cam doesn't have it between the ears. It's like, listen, I get it. You don't like, it's like, I get it. You're racist. It's basically what it is. Cam's only problem is when he's injured. And if you watch the end of the 2018 season, after the Steelers game on Thursday night, I think in week 9, the Panthers didn't give him like a target more than 6 or 7 yards down the field. And it was because Cam had nothing left in his arm, and they waited too long to get the arm fixed, and it sort of delayed things a bit. He was fine for 2017. They waited too long as well. 2019, he hurts his foot, and then you can see it in week 2 against Tampa Bay. I rewatched that game last night. He will not put any weight on his left foot. He's like standing on his toes, and he can't drive through the ball at all. And as a result, he's just sailing balls all over the field. That's really the only thing that Cam does bad. If you put him in a pro style system with a good offensive coordinator, and he is fully healthy, he's going to annihilate people. He's a unicorn. He is different than any other football player that's ever played this game. Like, I get it that Michael Vick and Randall Cunningham and Lamar Jackson can all run the ball, but they're not built like Julius Peppers. He's, right. he, in my opinion, the number one, Rob Gronkowski is the second greatest red zone threat of all time, and Cam Newton's number one because he can run the ball.
Okay, so the one thing we were talking about today is that, you know, Cam Newton throughout his career, he has been the victim of non-flags more than any other player. That we've seen him get cracked over and over and over again. You know, the kind of calls that Tom Brady could fart and end up getting a flag thrown. Cam Newton, for some reason, they allow people to manhandle the guy, go helmet to helmet with him, and he never got the calls. Do you think that now that he's a Patriot, that might change?
That's interesting. As you were asking the question, I was sort of thinking that might be the case. Probably not. I think it's a Shaq factor.
Right.
So like there's a couple other human beings that qualify as well. Like Julio Jones doesn't get as many pass interference calls because he's such a freak. I think Calvin Johnson probably qualified as well. It's like you wouldn't blow the whistle on somebody for trying to stop Shaq from dunking the ball because you knew that Shaq was going to dunk the ball no matter whether you blew the whistle or not. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of a thing with Cam. Like, people know he's able to run. They know he's bigger than most defenders. I mean, he was drafted with Von Miller, right? And
yeah.
Cam is like four times the size of Von Miller, who's probably a Hall of Fame pass rusher. So I think that's, I mean, Cam's basically built like J.J. Watt, except he gets to play quarterback. I think it's a Shaq factor where the referee subconsciously believe that Cam will overcome whatever he is dealing with and therefore don't throw the flag. But I also think there's a Bill Belichick, Mike Krzyzewski factor here where Belichick works the refs. I mean, like, people don't talk about that enough. He works the refs before the game. He right. works them during the game. And because it's Bill Belichick, they listen to him. If he's telling them, hey, look, man, you're hitting my guy with – like, you're not getting my guy on this roughing the passer. That's clearly roughing the passer. They're going to perk up, and they're going to be overactive. So, yeah, I think there's a very good chance that that the flags are a little more friendly now for Cam Newton with the Patriots in the same way that I can't remember who pointed out yesterday. So I was like, it's weird. Now that Cam's on the Patriots, everyone seems to love him. And that universal love wasn't there when he was on the Panthers. I don't know why, but it's just the case.
Well, there's no more likable a team than the Patriots, I have to tell you that.
It's because that's true. Everyone hates the Patriots. But
I do.
When Belichick gives you the seal of approval by bringing you in.
Right.
Sure. It changes everything.
You're yeah, like, sure. Oh,
Antonio Brown, maybe he didn't do those heinous things off the field.
Right. Well, people feel a little differently than I do then, because I don't feel that way. But the Cam Newton thing, they got nothing to lose. And like if you said, I mean, he is otherworldly. And if he is indeed healthy and, you know, he's not getting beat up, it's for $1 million. You can get a guy who's, top 10 quarterback.
The one alternate, I don't know if it's alternate reality. I think it can play out. But, like, I'd say it's like a 2 or 3% chance. But if it does play out, what if Jared Stidham beats out a healthy Cam Newton?
We were talking about that. If you're a Patriots fan, you probably want that, don't you?
Yeah, you would want that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you don't want him beating out like a bum like Cam Newton on like one leg. You don't want that.
No.
But if he beats out a healthy Cam Newton,
you're creating a false narrative if you think there is anything at all negative about them bringing him in. There's nothing. There's no money. If he goes, they get a third round pick back. There's nothing. There's no negative. If he loses the job to the kid, it means the kid's ready, and it means that you have a quarterback for the next few years that you're paying nothing to. So
and like he is the perfect shield to follow Tom Brady because no one's like, well, if Cam can't, I mean, Cam's already won an MVP. He's been to a Super Bowl. He's a totally different style of quarterback than Tom Brady. If he doesn't live up to whatever Tom Brady did, no one's going to be like, well, that clown that followed Tom Brady.
Right.
Yeah, Cam came to New England. He didn't work out. And then he'll pass it to Jared Stidham. It's the ultimate buffer. And
right.
Again, Bill Belichick, an economist at heart, like economist, he played this market perfectly.
Yeah.
He saw that there was going to be one of Jameis, Cam, and Andy Dalton left after the musical chairs ended, and he'd be able to sign him for dirt cheap. I mean, it's a pretty impressive job.
Yeah, there's I can't think of one downside for them doing that. Will Brinson, senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com. He had a lady on his Daily Pick 6 podcast who moved to Los Angeles, we've learned today.
You know, actually, I had a guy, Sully, my boy Tyler Sullivan, who works at CBS Sports. He's a Boston guy.
Yeah, worked here in the past.
We talked Cam and Patriots. You guys should have him on the radio. He's good. We talked Cam and Patriots yesterday, and then we have a quarterback ranking. You'll be surprised to find where Tom Brady lands if you want to download.
Oh, I get Sam Darnold in the field. All right. Thank you so much, Will Brinson.
See you guys.
All right. We appreciate it. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub. Boston sports fans start their day with Toucher and Rich.
There's a disagreement here in studio.
How unusual.
Let me tell you what, it's what makes us different that makes us great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
At 5, the Sports Hub, where Toucher and Rich, Carl Reiner has died.
98 years
yes,
old.
Yes, he was still doing the 10,000-year-old man. And people just go crazy about him and Mel Brooks doing the 10,000-year-old man. And I've listened to it, and I have no idea why it's remotely humorous. None at all.
I don't think I've ever seen it. I don't think I've ever actually seen it. I know what it is, and I know it's like everyone thinks it's one of the best comedy skits of all time, but I don't really know what it is.
Yeah, he kind of peaked when he did Breakin', and that was the movie that put him over the top.
He was in Breakin'? The breakdance movie?
Yeah, Carl Reiner wrote Breakin'.
I thought that maybe for some reason he like did it for like a quick paycheck, and they just ran, because every once in a while there's like a bad movie that randomly has a really good actor, and you're like, whoa, how did this person get involved in this?
Dustin Hoffman was in Rad. I don't know if you saw that. You know they're re-releasing Rad. That Dan was showing me, they're re-releasing it.
We rewatched the trailer here in the studio. Yeah, like
it's
4K.
It's so bad.
That's kind of funny.
Lori Loughlin's in it.
Well, Lori Loughlin was throwing heat back in the day. So, I mean,
she's hotter now than she was then. She's improved her body. But she's, but like, I get it's like funny and everything. Rad, like, but let's break it. Rad sucks. Like, you're going to go to the movies and see Rad?
You see, I wouldn't watch Rad. I would watch Thrashin' today. Now, that I would watch.
You would go
if that
to
was
the
on TV. Well, yeah, Thrashin' had a young. It's the first time I'd ever heard of the Red Hot Chili Peppers before. They were on stage in that movie. That was Breakin's in Memory, the bad guy. You knew he was a bad guy because there was a bunch of people watching a breakdancer, and then he ends up smashing the guy's radio.
Wait,
it goes Breakin's in Memory.
Were Red Hot Chili Peppers in that movie, or were they in a. A Santa Cruz video.
They were Thrashin' because they played Black Eyed Blonde on stage. And they were throwing skate decks out into the crowd. And I'm like, this is the greatest concert ever. They're giving away free skateboards from the stage. Doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. And then they ended up being so good. California Cajun.
I like them in the movie The Chase. Did you ever see that movie with Christy?
Yes. The Chase. And
Flea and him in the car.
That's right.
That's right.
Flea was in Suburbia, the real Suburbia, not the one with Eric Bogosian or whatever his name. The Penelope Spheris Suburbia, which I figured the other day is the movie I've seen the most in my entire life, is the movie Suburbia, with directed by Penelope Spheris, featuring a young Flea, pre-Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, Fear and Loathing, I think he was in, too.
That movie sucked.
Yeah, that was like the first like 15 minutes were really interesting, and then after that it was just like too much.
Well, it's like Johnny Depp did too good an impression of Hunter Thompson. Like Hunter Thompson was impossible to understand when he spoke, and Johnny Depp did too good an impression of him, so you couldn't understand any of the dialogue.
Anthony Kiedis shot his foot off in Point Break.
He
was one of the ex-presidents are surfers. He was one of those guys. Also, the most awful plot twist in any of the Back to the Future type films is when if you called Marty McFly chicken, they just randomly threw that in there to move storylines ahead.
Yep.
And the second one had never mentioned it in the first one. And the third one, remember what happened? Flea pulls up to the stoplight and calls him chicken. He was also one of the goons in the second one from the future.
I've never seen the Back to the Future 3. That's in the Old West, right? West,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not bad. 3 was actually pretty good.
Never felt the need to pop that boy.
Three was okay.
Three was pretty good. I thought 3 was better than 2. 2 was kind of, eh. 1's excellent, obviously. The only reason I know this is I've watched all these fairly recently.
Yeah, I've watched 1 and 2 within the last couple of years because of my kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, yeah. I mean, Flea was in that. Flea was in The Big Lebowski. He was one of the German guys who was going over to what's-his-name, who peed on his rug, I think, if I'm not mistaken, to Jeff Bridges' rug.
Well, that's good. I'm glad he was in a terrible movie.
Big Lebowski's not a terrible movie.
Out of all the movies you just mentioned, I would say that The Big Lebowski is the worst out of all of them.
I know you're not a big fan. Big Lebowski, I will say, maybe slightly overrated, and I'm a huge Coen Brothers fan, but I don't even think it's a top five Coen Brothers movie.
I don't think people really like it.
Oh, no, see, that's different, because there's parts of it that are amazing. There's some really funny parts.
I think that people have been told to like that movie, and that it's one of those things that has been willed into existence. Except for Totoro, there's nothing funny in that movie. Nothing.
Oh, I don't know nothing. About that. Jeff Bridges is great in that movie.
He's
like
he's
his
hateable.
Character's great.
I hate him in that movie.
When he gets pissed off when they're playing the Eagles, that's one of my favorite parts. Just that, like the worst thing. He's like, God damn, I hate the Eagles. Turn off the Eagles. The guy kicks him out of the car.
John Goodman. I love him in that movie.
Goodman was pretty funny in it, too. Goodman was funny.
That movie sucks. So bad. It's almost, it was like a drudge. It's just impossible to get through. And people say that it's good. I just think that they've been told it's good for so long that they insist upon it. Because that's the thing with comedy, is like comedy, it's very difficult if something's not funny to get through it. You can watch a crappy drama and be fine. But if something's supposed to be funny and you don't understand anything that's going on, maybe it's just my stupidity. I don't know why it's funny that he's drinking White Russians. I don't know why it's funny that they're bowling. I don't know why it's funny that he wears a robe. I don't know any of that. But there he is, right there.
Yeah.
Bridges
was fantastic in that. I thought he was great. As I said, it's not even a top five Coen Brothers movie, though. No way. Fargo, number one. Miller's Crossing. No Country for Old Men. I mean, Raising Arizona. Even like comedies from them. Raising Arizona is a better comedy. But still,
Did you watch the folk movie one? I own that. It's in my parents' house, but I have not watched it because I think I'll hate it.
It's really good. What is the name of it? Yeah, it's got the Poe Dameron from the Star Wars movies. Justin Timberlake's in that movie. As a matter of fact, Poe Dameron's in it, and so is Kylo Ren. They're both in the movie, and they sing a song together. No, it's good. Yeah, I've been afraid to watch it
because I hate folk music, so I've been I don't want to watch it.
It's less about the folk music as it is about just uncomfortable. This is a guy who just, once again, like many Coen Brothers movies, he makes awful decisions throughout the entire movie, and it's like almost cringeworthy because everything he does, you know, is the wrong thing that he's doing. You should watch, what is it, A Simple Man?
I liked it. I saw A Simple Man.
Oh, that was great.
I liked the Coen.
It's similar to A Simple Man. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You'll like it.
Yeah.
Inside Llewellyn Davis, or I think that was the name of the movie.
Yes,
it's not bad. It's pretty good.
I own it, but it's at my parents' house. Because my parents don't have their TV connected to the internet. You'd be surprised what DVDs go for now. Get one $5.
I don't even have a DVD player.
Oh, they have one but it's not Blu-ray. So, like, if I make a mistake and get the Blu-ray DVD, it's unplayable. If I touched anything in that room, in their theater room, they would have a heart attack. My mom start crying. She would start crying. That's exactly what she would do. All right, Rich, what do we have coming up in the old stackaroo?
Oh, we've got some news regarding an ex-player who was on the Patriots saying he never wanted to be drafted here. On top of that, what is the greatest, Nick, get ready, what is the greatest comic book movie of the 2010s? Oh, big decade for comic book movies. Get your bets in now.
It's no heavy metal. Mm-hmm. With where you could dance upon animated boobies.
All while Open Arms by Journey is playing, I think.
Yeah, Sammy Hagar, they call it heavy metal.
That's true.
Don't mind if I take a gander on those tootsies. Okay.
All right. Here are the headlines.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. The stack is sponsored by Window Nation. It's Window Nation's buy two, get two free sale. No down payment, no payments. And 0% financing for 12 full months. Go to windownation.com. What's going on, Rich?
So Jacoby Brissett, apparently, when he was drafted, didn't even want to be here. Here's Jacoby Brissett.
I did not want to be there. When I took my visit there, my pre-draft visit, I was like, hell no. One team draft me, it better not be them. I'll never forget, Josh called me on the phone on draft night. I didn't have his number saved. That's how bad it was. I didn't have his number saved in my phone. I was like, damn, man.
I wonder how often that happens. Is that people come here and they look around and they just see how, you know, they probably visit some place like, oh, I don't know, where would be like the fun team that you like, Seattle. They would go to like the Seahawks and they see Pete out there chewing gum and hey guys, and they're playing music and everyone's horsing around, and then they come out to Gillette and they see that it's basically the opposite of that. I wonder how many players are just like, damn it, not the Patriots.
So where were they going with that though? He didn't want to be here for what reason? Was it just being the Patriots, being a backup because of the city? I mean, this guy was a star quarterback at NC State, was actually scouted by Bill Parcells, who was, and I believe they were sending scouts to go see him. So, like, he clearly knew the Patriots were gonna draft him, or at least interested in drafting him. So, like, coming out years later and all the – it's just weird. When I see a picture of Jacoby Brissett, I'm calling him out. It's him, Jimmy Garoppolo, and Brady. They're all, like, the three quarterbacks. Like, he repped that thing for a long time. He became the starter when Brady – obviously, Brady was suspended and Garoppolo got hurt.
Once you got here, it's different. I think once you're here, it's different. But, I mean, at first you're getting the call.
But why? What's the point of that story, though? Is this a Boston thing again, or – What he just didn't want to be in New England? I'm just, where did that come from? I didn't want to come to Boston? For what reason?
He said, I never forget Josh McDaniels called me on the phone draft night. He goes, damn, man. He goes, once he arrived at Foxborough, though, he quickly changed his tune. He credited Devin as well as former Patriots Terrence Knight, Anthony Johnson, Martellus Bennett for creating a fun, welcoming environment. He said, I've never been around so many older dudes that were so young, you know. I guess that's part of it, too, is that it was like an older team. He goes, one of the main things that I learned was just how to be a pro. We would laugh in the locker room and decompress when we're not doing football and stuff. But when we were in football, everyone thinks it's like the military. We were locked and loaded. There was no game where we felt like, damn, this team might beat us. So it doesn't sound like it has anything to do with, okay, you know, the reputation
says,
of the city.
You can text Tom, and Tom responds like he's your girlfriend, as he says.
No, there you go.
Like a teenage girl.
So he liked it here, after all.
Yeah. So, yeah, of course he did. Okay, I mean, he says nice things about it now, and he clarified afterwards that they made him feel comfortable. But, yeah, I mean, you show up, and you're a young guy, and it's a bunch of older dudes. And also, you know, at that point, you've got two guys on the depth chart ahead of you. You know, you're one of them being the greatest of all time, who seems like, how funny it seems now, that he would be a lifer to stick around. And then you've got Jimmy Garoppolo there as well. So even if Tom Brady wasn't a lifer, you knew that Jimmy Garoppolo was going to be the guy. So I don't know. There's probably a ton of reasons why, you know, you wouldn't want to. And also, just everyone says the same thing. This isn't a place you come to have fun. It's a place you go to win. And it's probably tough. That's a part of you that's just like, man, this is going to be a grind.
He got himself a nice little payday getting traded after, too.
Yeah,
he did. He absolutely did. So, by the way, some of the things that are going to be prohibited under baseball's new safety protocols, we've talked about a few of these, but the arguing or brawling, that will get you an ejection from the game. So if there's any kind of argument that you have with any kind of umpire, that sounds to me as if you are immediately going to be thrown out of the game if you approach them and get anywhere in their facial region.
And then that will solve everything, because Lord knows once you're kicked out of a game as a manager, you automatically walk away.
Well, Joe West is just going to be in his happy place.
Well, Joe West can jiggle his man boobs at everyone and get all excited. But I just think that's funny, because the point is they kick you out, and then you just sit there yelling at them for the next couple minutes. So you can kick them out all you want, unless you have security come and get them. They're gonna sit there yelling at you. All these things that baseball are trying to do are so futile. It's just like, none of it's gonna. First of all, it's impossible to enforce, and second of all, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, like sunflower seeds, you know?
Yeah, like, oh,
spitting is prohibitive. Yeah.
Yeah, like you
like, have you ever seen Terry Francona in the dugout?
Yes, he has chaw, legit chaw wrapped in bubble gum that he puts in his cheek and he puts seeds in it.
Yeah.
And he constantly spits. Like, that's like telling someone not to touch their face. Like these guys aren't going to spit. Mm. It's ridiculous.
No, you can't blow on your hand and then touch the ball.
Or you can't lick your fingers. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, then everyone's going to get COVID. By the way, if licking your fingers and touching the ball and then it going to the catcher or being hit to a position player gets you the COVID virus, then they're all going to have the COVID virus. I mean, if I lick my fingers and then I rub the ball and I throw it and it's a ground ball to shortstop and the shortstop gets COVID from it and the first baseman gets COVID from it, there's no way in the world not everyone's getting COVID. It's ludicrous. I mean, if you're going to play the game, just play the game. I mean, take, you know, sanitize the balls before, do whatever the hell you want to do. But I mean, like, you're going to tell a pitcher not to lick his fingers? It's impossible. That's just not going to happen. If it's easily transmitted, then everyone's going to get it.
Instant ball, if you lick your fingers, I think. I think for the batter, it's an instant ball.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Benefits the batter. Why not? Let's change the rules. Let's go all in, man.
Yeah.
If we're going to embrace these things, go all in on it.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck. Been doing it. I've 30-year-old pitcher. I've been doing this for 25 years, and you're going to tell me to stop doing it. All right.
On top of as far as things that are really stupid, you remember how we talked about this TikTok challenge that's been going on for a while where somebody will film themselves jumping into those gigantic fish tanks over at Bass Pro Shops,
yeah.
And then they'll jump out and they'll take off? Well, there was this one guy in Louisiana who said if he got 2,000 likes, he would jump in the tank.
That's pretty sure impressive. Enough, 2,000 likes.
Wow, 2,000 people like him.
What a superstar.
He said, I got way more than that. I didn't want to be a liar. So he shows up at this Louisiana Bass Pro Shops, jumps in and immediately gets arrested. So it sounds like somebody at Bass Pro Shops had seen this gentleman tweet that. I would think that's probably something you keep an eye on.
Okay, so what are you jumping into?
It's okay. If you haven't been to a Bass Pro Shops, first of all,
I have.
I mean, they're the greatest. Like, I could spend 5 hours in a Bass Pro Shops. So you walk in, and usually in most of these places, and I think maybe even all of them, the first thing you see right in the center, the big centerpiece, which makes the store so great, is this gigantic fish tank. Now, there's real fish inside of it, and usually there's a stair to either the left or the right that takes you to the second level, which means that if you are halfway up those stairs, you're standing right there where you can jump on into the fish tank if you want to. And this is something that has gone, it's become like a big viral sensation. And this dude got his 2,000-something likes, went, jumped in, and immediately was arrested and taken to jail afterwards. 13,000 gallons, this thing. I mean, it is enormous. And the videos you've seen, I've seen people do like cannonballs into it, which, I mean, poor fish. Hopefully none of them flew on out.
Oh, yeah, because they're living the life.
Sure. Well, not get eaten by big predator fish.
Well, I'm sure the commotion of the guy coming in will be something they remember forever. Mm-hmm. Unlike the fact that aren't fish supposed to constantly forget, like every 10 seconds, like a goldfish forgets where it is or something like
sure.
that.
Sure, they're dumb animals, not very smart.
They're stupid. I hate them.
AMC Theaters keeps moving back the opening of all the screens.
Why would you open? I mean, why would you even open?
July 30th now, it seems to be when it expects to open 450 of its theaters, and they hope to be essentially fully operational by early August.
They should think about doing outdoor. Like, they need to come up with something with all those parking spots. Like, I don't want to go inside a theater. I'm sorry.
I'd go inside a theater, but just there's no movies. I mean, why would they open? There's no movies.
That's true, yeah.
That's the other thing. All of the movies that were supposed to come out have either already been moved, or the holdouts, like a movie like Milan and Tenet, that big Christopher Nolan movie, those films keep getting moved back because they want to be the first ones there when people go back to the theater. Well, Tenet got moved back to August 12th, and now Milan got moved back to August 21st. But you've seen it all over the place. Even here, they're opening up a makeshift drive-in. There's a movie theater that's here, and they said, if we got to survive, we got to figure out a way to make money. So they ended up building this big screen at an old ball field here, and they're doing the whole drive-in thing. And I know you're over at the Kowloon there, Joe Murray, which I know they're doing something like that as well.
I believe tonight is the grand opening, I believe.
I thought you
but
went.
You
to
were at the VIP.
I went to the VIP.
I mean, come on, Rich. What are we talking about? Right. No, you think the platters are playing for just anyone?
No, they're not playing for the schlubs.
You don't bring out the platters unless you're talking about V to the I to the P.
That's right.
I mean, and, Brutus the Barber, Beefcake was there.
Speaking of films, Collider has come out with the... They've ranked every comic book movie from the 2010s. Mm. So from 2010 until last year, they have ranked them all, and there are an assload of them. I mean, this is the decade of the comic book movie. So before we go to which ones you think were ranked the worst, any guess... Anyone in the room, Joe Murray, you're a betting man. Where would you put your money as far as being ranked the best movie of the 2010s?
I bet you that I know, and I have only seen a couple of them. Thor Rancock.
I'll go back.
Ragnarok.
Ragnarok.
which, by the way, is probably my favorite comic book movie of that era. And that comes in at number three, Fred.
Ah, not bad, eh?
Very good. Very, very good. Joe Murray, your guess.
Batman. Any of them.
Dark Knight, I don't think, was in the 2010s.
Shazam. And I like Shazam.
Shazam was really good. I think that's in the, I think that's like number like 15 or something.
Okay, I liked Shazam.
Yeah, I did too. Got a lot of respect. No, coming in at number 10, Wonder Woman, which was pretty good.
I saw that.
Number 9, Captain America Winter Soldier, very good. And number 8, The Original Avengers. That's a great one. Number 7, Captain America Civil War. That is an excellent one as well. The list is good so far. And number 6, Avengers Infinity War. I loved Infinity War.
Was that the one that was so emotional for Nick?
Yes, he said he was emotionally exhausted. No, I think Endgame he was emotionally exhausted.
What is Logan on that list?
Logan's number 5. Right. Very good. Logan was pretty damn good as well.
Oh, number it's going to be Black Panther.
Nope, it's number 4. Black Panther is number 4. Black Panther was pretty good. I thought it was...
I couldn't get through the first 10 minutes of it.
It gets better. Number 2 is Avengers Endgame. Good. I don't think it was as good as Infinity War. And at number 1... This is a good one. And you know what? I don't have a problem with being number 1. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Have you seen that movie?
Is that Nicolas Cage?
No, Nicolas Cage is in it. He's a character that's in it, but he's not a main character. It's the cartoon one that was made.
I saw that. I didn't really pay attention to it though. I saw it I showed it to my kids.
I loved it. It was excellent. The way it was drawn was kind of next level stuff. The soundtrack was really good.
Nick Miller from New Girl was one of the main characters in that.
He was Peter Parker, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Now, at the bottom of the list, anyone care to guess what some of the worst comic book movies of the decade were?
It's something Hulk, right?
Fantastic Four, the remake, that is the last...
Batman thing with Ben Affleck?
No, that's kind of middle of the pack. Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds at number 53. I don't even care how bad those movies were. Suicide Squad should have been number...
That Rotten Tomatoes rating for it isn't, like, horrible. Because now I'm fascinated by it because of how corny the Joker guy was.
He was the corniest. Yeah. Like, the corniest.
So I kind of want to see it, but, like, so I looked at, like, some people liked it, which is funny to me.
All right. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, listen, when it was just Will Smith, he was Will Smith. Who doesn't like Will Smith? What's funny is that number 3 is Thor Ragnarok, and number 47 is Thor the Dark World. Like, the second one sucked. Justice League comes in at number 46. That's way down there, too. That was not... And by the way, apparently... HBO is spending upwards of like $25 to $30 million to release the director's cut of the Justice League. Because apparently, you know, the director, had like a death in his family. And halfway through it, I think they gave it to Joss Whedon to finish it or something like that. And so everyone's saying, oh, but the original is supposed to be really good. No, there's no way to polish that turd. That thing is awful. Justice League's the worst. And they're just going to throw bad money at, like, who wants to see this other than, like, this? This is one of those things where 18 people on the internet, there's some guy, like, in an executive's office who think that's the world, that everyone thinks the way these 18 people who are very vocal think. Yeah. So there you go. So there's your best and worst comic movies of the 2010s.
Well, I've seen 3 of the top 10, so not bad from my end. And I think I saw the original Avengers, but I'm not sure.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Pick Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.